You're watching Fanboy Versus with your hosts, JD Church, Nicole Hale, Chris Triplett, and Chris McFeely.
And you are watching Fanboy Versus. I am your host, JD, back after a week's break. Chris Triplett is here. Nicole Hale is still traveling the world. Therefore, she is played by Gozer, also known as the Traveler. Chris McFeely is out. You know, if you follow him on Twitter and Facebook, you'll know that his father has fallen ill. He's been, of course, helping take care of him. So we wish him a speedy recovery. Chris wanted to at least take this week off, possibly longer. So the mysterious man that you may be seeing if you're watching this on video is none other than Matt, also known as Time Lord, also known as Timey, and various other things that people may call him. Welcome, sir, to the show.
Thank you for having me. It was kind of an honor. It's rather big shoes to fill. I'm not exactly going to go, yay, I'm here, and all of that. Chris, hope everything is fine, and, you know, fantastic, mate. You've got some big deals to fill.
Yeah, so good luck to you.
You should have introduced him as like the special surprise guest star in like the new issue of Fanboy Versus.
Right.
Something comic featuring. Like you'll never expect what happens on the last page and who shows up. It's, you know, Wolverine.
It's like the most ridiculous thing. There was like that dark. I have a copy of it, but there was like a issue of Excalibur that was like the crossover dark universe where like Captain Britain was fighting whatever Dark Universe version of himself it was. And there was the Evil Universe version of Iron Man there. And it was like on the cover, it was like Captain Britain versus whoever. And the winner takes on Iron Man. I was like,
okay.
What? I still have no idea what that comic is talking about. But yeah, so something like that. So featuring Matt. There you go.
There you go.
So, it is Fanboy Versus the Hiatus, as we took a hiatus. We took a break last week, and so that means we've got 2 weeks worth of books. There's all kinds of craziness going on. This is 0 month for DC, so there's some of that. You know, we're getting in the mix of everything that's coming out for Marvel now. So it went so well last time that I tried to do the news. I'm going to try to do it again.
Is there news?
And we'll see how it goes. There's not much news. The only source that I actually look at is Bleeding Cool. So, you know, that's probably a bad idea right there.
That's your problem.
That's probably it. So let's see. One thing, you know, Dan Slott's talking about not enough people, not enough shops have pre-ordered enough of 698, which is, I guess, that's going to be the next issue, isn't it? I think that's the one after. But it's he's saying that this is going to be a pivotal issue, that this is going to lay the groundwork for what will eventually be 700. So if you're, you know, one of those people that's waiting to get a hold of 700, wrong. No. Get Amazing Spider-Man now. You should have been buying it, you know, a while ago, but apparently
should have been buying it like 5 years back. There's no reason anybody shouldn't have been buying this, but 5 years back.
Right. I mean, I wasn't, but that's a different story. Yeah. So, you should definitely make sure you're getting 698, because that's going to lead up to 700, which is apparently the last issue.
God, no.
Oh, my God. No. 700 issues, they're just canceling the series. It'll be all over.
What?
Yeah. Remember, just like Fantastic Four, probably, that ended at 700.
So what you're saying is that Mary Jane's going to die, but she's not going to die, and she's going to be fighting, like, Annihilus in another world? Or is that what you're saying,
I don't know. Well, I mean, you know, of course, the speculation abounds as far as, you know. The funny thing is that, you know, here's the deal. Like, DC does New 52, and they, like, wipe all of this stuff, and they go back to you know, one, and everybody, like, shits themselves. They're like, oh, my God. But Marvel is doing Marvel now, and they're taking all these books back to one, and they're like, so? Because Marvel, it's like, oh, it's Thursday of September the, you know, 5th. Okay, yeah, it's time to go back to zero issues and one and stuff. So, you know, the only thing, the only question is, what does it mean? You know, what are they going to do with it?
It just means that it leads credence to your theory that numbers don't matter anymore.
They don't matter anymore.
They don't matter.
They're really – no. It's just, you know, it ought to just be – like a, and like I said, I've suggested this before. That it would just be, you know, month and year. September of 12, and we just go, you know, from there or whatever. But I don't know. I mean, I'm interested to see what it means story-wise because when, like – you know, when you got to that 700 point of FF or Fantastic Four, you know, Johnny died, and then that's why they did the whole switch, and so there was like a story reason to it. So, has Peter ever died?
Yes.
I'm assuming he had, but like when and what? Because I don't. I mean, I'm not up on all of my like Peter history. Like, when was the last time Peter died?
Let's see. I think he has. Let's see. Well, yeah, he died during the JMS story. What was that thing called? The Other? Was that what that story
was?
Was
that the one that ended with the queen when he gave birth to himself?
No, no, that's the one that he died. No, no, the queen thing. I don't know, did he die in that one? He got like ate by a spider or something, and he was like inside its belly, and he came out, and then he could shoot webbing out of his arms. That was stupid. But
yeah, that's when he went into a chrysalis and came back as a Spider-Man. Yeah.
But then, like, JMS did that storyline that, like, crossed over, and he actually died, and then he came back, and he got, like, new spidery powers. Like that's when he had, like, the stickers that would come out of his arm and stuff. You know, all that stuff that Marvel forgot about. They just
right. Yeah. Well, it was JMS.
It was only brought in because, hey, the Tobey Maguire movies, it's organic web shooters, and, you know, those films are selling, so let's put it in the books. Yeah.
Let's not do that.
Yeah.
So he died, and then there's, like, the clone stuff where it's like he wasn't really Peter Parker.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a death.
That's kind of a death.
Of him as a character.
I mean, I think it would be interesting. I mean, I think it would be interesting to see, like, a Dan Slott version of a Peter death, like, if they were going to do that. I don't think
Ultimate Spider-Man. And that,
I know, he just died in Ultimate, too, and that's why I'm like, but...
Yeah, no.
No, here's what they need to do. So they kill him in, like, a regular Marvel Universe, and then they bring Miles over, and they have him be Spider-Man. What? And, like, that just becomes his thing. Like, he becomes Spider-Man after Peter dies. So...
Okay, like, speaking of that, like, I read Spider-Man, like, the last issue of it. And you might not be too far off because of what happens on the last page of that.
Yeah,
hell yes.
Well, you have to tell me about that.
I might talk about that too.
Yeah.
That might be like a brief.
Because I know both of you have read that, so.
Yeah.
Interesting. So, anyway, so we'll see. There's really not a lot of talk. I mean, at this point, I don't think that Slott has said anything. He's not confirmed or denied that he's going to be on the book after 700 or whatever happens. I would assume they may go back to one issue because it's right around the time of Marvel now. Does that mean Dan Slott's leaving the book? We just don't know. We don't know anything at this point. So
it seems like a good jumping off point. I don't want him to go. I mean,
oh, if Slott leaves,
switching to a new one.
Well, I mean, okay. So let's set up an imaginary scenario. Let's say Slott leaves Amazing Spider-Man. Who that would go on that book would keep you on the book? Like,
it's gonna keep me on the book. I mean, you know, come on. And it's Spider-Man.
I know, but I'm saying it's like, what would
Brian Kilby could be writing the Amazing Spider-Man, and I'd still be.
Well, okay, fair enough. But okay, so what would keep you from losing sleep at night over it?
what would make me excited and happy and absolutely love it?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm trying to think of somebody that's not done it that would be fantastic.
I don't think Fraction's ever done it.
Could be interesting. You know, I didn't think much about Fraction. I'd only really seen him in some event books, and I kind of thought that he was sort of, for lack of a better term, a hipster. And but I'm really digging him on Hawkeye. So That might not be bad. That could be interesting. It may be a, you know, a cooler, trendier version of Peter, but that could be interesting.
Grant Morrison.
Amazing. You want to see Grant Morrison on Amazing? I think he's a little busy with independent comics now, but, you know, but that could be fascinating as well.
My God, that would be a trip.
Is there a fifth dimension version of Spider-Man that could, like...
There will be, and it'll be called Spider-Ham.
Spider-Ham, is that what it'll be? Is Spider-Ham will show up and cause mischief in Spider-Man's world?
Yes, that's his Spider-Mite, thanks to Grant
Wow. Yeah. Cool. So, speaking of people leaving comics, Greg Rucka. He announced this week that he is done with superhero books. He is moving on to independent publishing.
What is up with this? So, like, he's gone and Grant Morrison's gone, right?
I think you're seeing a bit of a... Grant Morrison is pretty much gone too. I think you're seeing a little bit of a changing of the guard when it comes to comics. You know, it's become very corporate. And, you know, just like anything, there's some people that can do that and there's some people that can't. And it seems like some of the old guard that were used to, you know, working for a comic book company and kind of being left alone. I mean, I got to be careful how I say this. But, you know, some people just like to do their own thing and not have a lot of oversight and not... they just want to put out a book and have it be theirs, you know, and whether or not they own it, just have it be like their thing. And, you know, that's just not the way of the world now in comics. You know, one of the things that Greg Rucka talked about is that, you know, he felt like he took Punisher over.
And it was excellent.
And yes, and I've heard good things about it, but now with the Marvel Now, they've got Punisher going on a team book. And one of his complaints was, well, they didn't ask me. I'm like, well,
That's not his book.
It's you know, it's not your character, even though it may be out of character for what's going on in your book. You know, that's an editorial decision, and
would have been an easy split on that because, like, in his Punisher, Punisher's got a beard. Mm-hmm. You don't usually see Punisher with a beard, so, like, when he shows up on this team book, then that's obviously not the Punisher because he doesn't have a beard like he does in the Greg Rucka
right.
comic.
Yeah. So I think what you're seeing is there's some people that just aren't – they're just not very tolerant of, like, this, you know, corporate idea. And it's not that – it's not that it's not screwed up, you know, and we've mentioned this several weeks in a row, but I'll go back to it, which is the Rob Liefeld thing. Think what you want about Rob Liefeld, you know, whether or not he can draw feet or whether or not he's a prick or can draw anything original, you know, say what you will. He has a point about the editorial problems at DC. It's not as bad, I don't think, at Marvel, because they seem to have at least gotten the idea to group books together, right? So, like, they have the, what they call, like, the Marvel New York books, which Stephen Wacker is doing most of the editing on, which is, like, the Spider-Man, it's like Spider-Man, Daredevil, Hawkeye, I think, is on that, and maybe, like, a couple other books, right? And so what that does is it's, like, it gives you, like, an outlet to say, okay, this is the go-to person for this. So if it's, like, if you're going to use Spider-Man in something, you want to talk to Stephen Wacker because he knows what his writers are doing, and that's going to help you to incorporate it. That doesn't seem to be going on over at DC, you know? Yeah.
what was it? Earth 2.
Correct.
World's Finest.
Yeah,
Earth example.
Yeah, exactly. And I even mentioned that to Rob Liefeld, and like his example was like what's going on with like Teen Titans. Well, he was talking about his book. Like, I think he was talking about
Deathstroke and Hawkman.
I think he was talking about like they were doing some stuff with Deathstroke that was screwed up between a couple of different books, and you know they just don't have the same editors between all those books. Yeah.
Ultimately, I think an awful lot of what's going on with DC, which they've kind of rised up to now, which is the reason why we're even getting these Zero issues, is this came, this was sprung upon them very suddenly. Very, very suddenly. And a lot of them didn't have time to think and actually sew together a proper little world. They didn't actually do much of a world build here. And as a consequence, certain things slipped through the net, like whatever they were planning for Tim Drake, obviously didn't get relayed by issue one of Teen Titans. The same reason why suddenly there has never been an iteration of the Teen Titans yet again in issue one or two of Teen Titans. They've mentioned that this is going to be the worst incarnation ever. Well, it's going to be, since it's now essentially their origin story. There's other little things as well, you know, even between the Bat books, where things just don't fit. But then again, when you've got about 10 to 15 books, whoever's exaggerating the number, you're going to have these little things as well. Certain things just haven't settled down well. And the reason why we're getting these Zero issues now is just to clarify a lot of stuff.
But that's some of the problem. I mean, there's things going on in Team 7 that seem to be contradicting things that were going on in, like, Deathstroke Zero and some of the other books. So it's like that they're not really digging themselves out of a hole with Zero issues. In some ways, they've just made it worse. I mean, because you heard about this Red Robin thing, Christopher. I guess if our listeners hadn't heard.
No, I haven't heard about it because I haven't been reading Teen Titans. I don't care.
Well, apparently, for one, like, they had established before that there had been, like, some sort of iteration of the Teen Titans before. And now they've retconned that out. So much so that they even they changed the dialogue in the trades, which is one thing that DC is doing a lot of. They're changing dialogue and things in the trades when they come out. So, like, the trade for Teen Titans changed a line when he said that this is going to be the worst iteration ever. If you want that line, it's only in the actual book. The trade line is different. I don't know what they changed it to.
We removed it completely.
Yeah.
Well, I've read the Teen Titans. I dropped it because I couldn't stand it. It's ugly and it's written bad and characters are awful and it's not what I want. I mean, it's the biggest mistake they had in all of 52, I think. And I have no idea what's going on with that book. No idea if there was an iteration of the Teen Titans. It kind of read like this is like the first one they ever done, but I wouldn't be surprised if they have no idea what they're doing with it.
Well, I think that was the intention. But the other thing is that now they're trying to establish that Tim was never a Robin. He was always Red Robin.
So he had no affiliation with Batman?
No, he was affiliated with Batman. It's basically like, I feel
because
like that line.
Batman Zero, like, has another thing to say about that.
It's like that line of like the episode 3, Star Wars episode 3, where he's like, how can you be on the council and not be a master? It's like, how can you be Batman's apprentice and not be a Robin? It's like, well, you're Red Robin. You're not a Robin. What? Of course he is. He's a Robin.
So does that mean Jason Todd wasn't a Robin, or that Grayson was a Robin? Because I'm confused.
I did look into this. They have diddled slightly with Jason Todd's backstory. It's still relatively the same as what we've come to know, but they've simplified some things and changed other things about. The whole thing between him dying and coming back, that's been simplified to the degree. Now, simply, his body was dug up and put in the Lazarus pit by Talia. Things have come in. No magical voodoo with Superboy Prime or anything like that. It's
so no,
simply,
like, super punch running him back. Oh, okay.
Wow.
So he died, they dug his body out, Talia did, and then put it in the Lazarus pit. End of. That's what's happening.
Wow.
That would make more sense than a super punch that brings you back from the dead.
Well, because they've established before that none of the crisis happened, so, you know.
Yeah.
The other thing is an awful, awful lot of Jason's backstory now, from what made him Robin to what happened with his dad and everything, has been more extrinsically tied in with the Joker.
Okay.
So, yeah, the Joker has always messed up Jason Todd in one way or another, even before he beat the crap out of him and killed him.
I've got a little bit of this with Batman Number Zero, so when I talk about it, that specifically is the reason why I picked it, just because of something like that is in it. So I can talk a little bit more about that when we get to what I'm talking about.
But, you know, but to go back, you know, so all this started with Greg Rucka. So I just think that there's some people that just, you know, like the Rob Liefelds and like the Greg Rucka's and Brubakers and Morrison's who want a lot of creative freedom and, you know, don't want to work in that corporate, you know, sort of atmosphere. I think you're seeing them move to, you know, other things. And people will come in and take their place. You know, Rucka kind of said in a derogatory way, I think, that, you know, well, they can just, you know, replace you with anybody to get, you know, to write what you want. But
no, they can't.
I mean, yes and no. I mean, yeah, because they do want to just put out books. But what they're going to do is they're going to find creative people who can work within the confines of deadlines and, you know, the story and you know, what the editors and the higher-ups are wanting to see. That's who's going to be able to come along and thrive in this environment. You know, not the people who are like, oh, I want to tell a great story. You know, I mean, those are going to happen, but if you want to read those too, that's going to happen in independent comics. I mean, you know, look at like Saga, you know, Saga is sort of a semi-independent coming out of Image. You know, that would never happen at DC or Marvel. Not very likely, you know.
I don't know. I mean, it could be something like old DC. Like, you know, when they were doing Vertigo, that could have been a Vertigo title. Because, like, I just got done over, like, the last week finishing Why the Last Man for the first time. And, my God, that was an awesome book. I recommend it if you haven't read it, JD.
I have not. But, you know, yeah, I mean, again, it's just that the times have changed. You know, now you've got two corporations battling each other, really, when it comes down to it. Because now you've got, you know, DC and Marvel, a.k.a. Warner Brothers and Disney, you know, going at each other, you know, and that's just going to be the way of things until they either sell the comic divisions off again or whatever. But they're not going to do it because they see it as a vehicle for making films, and that's really, you know, what it comes down to. They bought these properties because these properties can make films. Well, not, I wouldn't say Warner Brothers necessarily did that, maybe a little bit. You know, definitely why Disney bought Marvel, but, you know, they got a great deal. Disney got a really good deal. Warner Brothers, not so much.
So you got Batman and what else? What's a Green Lantern?
What
else you got? Booster Gold.
Booster Gold.
What is that?
Arrow.
Like a car theft?
Yeah. So anyway, checking the
news.
Let's
make another Batman.
Yeah, let's make more Batman stuff.
The Erotic Adventures of Catwoman.
Oh my god. So I don't know what this means. There's not been a lot of details, but apparently Stan Lee had an appearance coming up. It was supposed to be this week on the 27th, and he has canceled without much information other than to say it was under very serious circumstances. I don't know if that means he's sick. I don't know if that means that, you know, his great-grandchild has a bar mitzvah that week. I don't know. But, you know, some implications are that he may be ill or something. So
he's getting up there in the years. Like,
he's
how old
90.
Is he at this point?
He's almost 90. Yep.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he's having some problems.
Yeah. So, last thing I'll mention, which is just kind of funny, is that Alan Moore spoke at a convention. I don't know what this was. NICE is all I know that it was abbreviated to, but there's some great YouTube videos of Alan Moore talking. And in particular, he talks about Stan Lee. there's a great bit in there where he talks about how, you know, like, Stan Lee's taking credit for creating Captain America, which we know he didn't. As Alan Moore points out, he was 12 at the time. but I think that it's just that I think that Stan has become like the sort of like the icon for that era. And so, even though, you know, he didn't create...
He's the father of Marvel Comics.
Exactly. And even though he didn't have anything to do with it, you know, he's alive and Jack Kirby's not. So, you know, even though Jack Kirby probably did most of the work of creating Marvel Comics, at least... You know, and Alan, I think, at least said that if nothing else, Stan did a lot to sort of create the sounds, if you will, of the Marvel Universe. You know, yeah, I mean, he sort of, you know, he sort of came up with some of the lingo that has been considered, you know, Marvel lingo. But,
a true believer.
Yes.
Exactly.
And even Alan said that. Even Alan was like, he went back, like, one of the videos is great because he's like, he went back and he looked at all the old stuff and the line notes and stuff that Kirby made. And he was like, well, all this is Kirby. All Stan did was come in and add a couple of these and thous and True Believer and Excelsior. Well, he maybe did a little bit more than that, but okay, I see what you're getting at. So anyway, I think that's about it. I don't think there's anything else. I know there's other stuff, but I'm not very good at finding this information, you know.
Yeah, like Christopher Cooley is trying to find something, but
I'm sure there's zero stuff I'm missing, but I either don't care or don't know.
Apparently, Dredd has only made $7 million in the U.S. box office. Come on, people, watch the film!
I was going to go see it, but, you know, shit happened this weekend. I'm going next weekend.
I do want to go see it. I think part of the problem for the American audience is that, you know, it's just not as ingrained, like, in our, you know, our only reference for Judge Dredd is the, you know, Stallone film. So,
God help us.
You know.
God help us.
I will tell you, yes, I know, I've been getting a lot of the comparisons. There's always this remake of that Sylvester Stallone film. It's not.
No.
It really is.
You know, I had this.
It probably didn't help that the Stallone film came out on Blu-ray the same week.
I had this discussion with my wife, and this is a completely arbitrary rule system I came up with, which is that for film, if the movie is based on pre-existing material, and then there's another movie that comes out that's with the pre-existing material, that is not a remake. Like, I would consider, like, a remake to be, if you take a movie that was a pre-existing movie and then make another movie based on that. Like they remade Psycho, right? Like, they did a Psycho remake. Okay, that's a remake of Psycho. But it's not a remake of the Judge Dredd film because the Judge Dredd stuff was pre-existing material. You know, it's just like the Dark Knight trilogy is not a remake of the Batman movies. It's just a new series of Batman movies because the material is pre-existing. So
what you're saying, so I can break it down for everybody, is that if they would have called this movie Dredd Begins, it would have done much better than
It's possible that it would have done better and had a cool, like, little logo, like, with sharp points, you know.
Yeah. Maybe not a whole bunch of bats on the screen, but, like, a whole bunch of bullets flying around.
Yeah, like, bullets all flying all over the place. Yeah. You know. Maybe it had, like, the helmet with a bullet sticking out of it and just say, like, this is not your father's Judge Dredd.
Yeah.
Maybe that would be...
Shit, I would have saw it three times if they did that.
That's a Transformers reference for those of you.
Of course, I could be a little bit biased, so...
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. It's just like, we don't have, you know, it's just like, it's not ingrained in our, you know... for the British audience, it's a completely different thing, you know? Yeah, because it's like all over the place, and here it's like, what? You know, for us, it's like, that is definitely something that only exists, like, on the shelves at, like, the local comic shop. Then you kind of go, oh, that's weird, I've never seen that, and then you keep going, you know, so...
No, I was going to say, the only thing I can recommend, I know that Judge Dredd's been picked up by IDW. Now, if IDW does something like reprinting the British strips like they do with Transformers, by all means, pick that up and read it, because you are guaranteed you're going to be reading sort of something big in the British comics industry there. So have a little taste of what we get.
Awesome. If that happens for sure, I'm excited to get that because, yeah, I mean, it just sounds interesting. It's just not something we've been able to get into over here. So.
Yeah. One other thing I will say, though, is even though if you have no idea about Dredd and Dredd's world, don't go into it with that sort of thing as it's the comic book movie. Go into it for the sort of movie that it is. And what it is just, it's certainly, don't bring your kids' film. Certainly don't bring your kids' film.
Oh, that won't stop us Americans.
We don't care.
Into it and judge it on its merits as a film. Because if you could do that, then that could be the catalyst in actually going ahead and then reading the Judge Dredd comics. Because I think as a catalyst, it works.
Cool. Cool. All right. Let's get to it then. Let's get to some recommendations for the past. We'll go 2 weeks because we missed a week. So you get 2 weeks of potential recommendations.
You have to. 2 weeks, because that's basically what I got. I think,
that, right, week. Exactly. Because Chris never keeps up with what week stuff came out. So, all right, we will start then with Chris Triplett, sir. What do you have recommendations for the week?
Just quick recommendation of Batman number 0. I think this is like one of the number zeros that I was looking forward to the most, just because, I mean, it's Batman. It's Scott Snyder. I love Scott Snyder's Batman book. Not only that, Greg Capullo is back because he didn't do the last issue. We had a fill-in artist for number 12, I think was the last one we got.
Yeah, 12.
Does that sound right? Yeah. And this one, I mean, it's basically just jumping back like 5 years and just kind of showing us where Batman is, and it's Mask of the Phantasm, Year One-ish type Batman type stuff, where he's kind of learning to become Batman still. He's kind of learning to kick butt and be a detective and all this stuff. But they're just kind of turning it on its side because in this issue, there's like this gang of Red Hood thieves. Like the Red Hood, like the Joker Red Hood, which I don't know. I mean, it doesn't really say. It doesn't really give you any indication. But, like, they've got a boss. There's, like, a whole bunch of them. They all wear the Red Hoods. They all wear something. And then they got a boss that actually has the dome, like, the old Red Hood costume where he's got the nice suit and everything and the dome Red Hood on it. And they don't say who this guy is. You don't ever see his face. There's no indications, but, number 13 is going to be about the Joker, So I don't know. I mean, maybe this guy, I would think it's the Joker. I mean, if it's not, who else would it be? So they kind of like lead into that a little bit. Batman infiltrates their gang and he's trying to stop them from robbing this bank, but everything goes horribly bad because if you're going to do basically like a Batman Year One story, the best one you do is where he just fucks everything up, I think, and that's what happens in it. He just he lets people get killed and everything. He's not Batman yet. He's learning to be Batman. And it's good. It's a good little story. I enjoyed that. But that's actually not even the real reason why I wanted to recommend it. I wanted to recommend it for the second story that Scott Snyder didn't write. And the second story, because it's two stories, it's got that story, and then it's got a second story, which basically is about Jim Gordon deciding to, we got to help Batman. At this point, it's like, Batman has appeared, but it's still early in his career, and he's like, we got to get him past this urban legend thing. We got to make it so that people know that Batman exists. And it's basically just about him, making the bat signal. And putting the bat signal up so that if there's a physical thing that Gotham can see, then they know this guy is real. They know it's not just something that the newspapers made up to scare criminals. And it's all about Batman's Robins. You get to see where all they were like 5 years ago. And we were talking about Teen Titans, and we were talking about Red Robin. Tim Drake's in it. He's in it, and it shows him he's in school, and he's like this kid genius, and he's going to get kicked out of school. His principal has decided he cheats on all of his exams or something. And basically in a very Batmanish way, he figures out that the principal is stealing money from the school, and he gets the principal fired.
Nice.
and he doesn't leave. And then the next part of the story is about Jason Todd. And it goes into Jason Todd was robbing convenience stores, and guess what? He was wearing a red hooded mask when he was robbing convenience stores. We see where Dick Grayson is. You know, of course, he's going to be, you know, at the circus. But it's just kind of interesting to see all the Robins and to see where they're at. And the story actually ends where all what they're doing coincides with them looking up into the sky and they actually see the bat signal for the first time. So it's a nice little story just kind of seeing, oh, they're on different points. You know, Tim Drake's in school. Jason Todd's living off the street, robbing places. Dick Grayson's, you know, doing the circus thing. And then it ends with Barbara on top of the police station looking up at the light, too. So it's not just the Robins, it's also Batgirl.
Mm.
And it's
Damien's
just a
in a jar. Did they have.
No, they cut that. Yeah. If they were to do, like, a director's cut, that would have been.
Damien in a jar.
Or maybe not just Damien in a jar, but like Batman having dirty thoughts or something. But yeah, I mean, it's a cool issue, and you can definitely see that this is going to lead into something, especially that whole Red Hood gang thing. But like, yeah, that's really interesting just to see if – I mean, it has to be the Joker is what I'm thinking, but where they go with that will be really cool, I think.
Cool.
Willing to throw in another bit of speculation, but it is only speculation, not based on any fact. This ties into the whole Talia and Jason Todd and what it all entails. Maybe the Red Hoods have got some kind of connection with Ra's al Ghul.
Should be.
It's a possibility. I mean, they're definitely making them a bigger thing now. I mean, it used to be just like this identity that like crooks would take on, and they would switch out the guy, and it'd be like a different guy each time. And it just so happened one of those guys, you know, fell into a vat of acid and he became the Joker. You know, that's what it was. Now they're like this thing, you know. I guess they're gonna turn it into something bigger. And just, you know, real quick, just another quick recommendation: Spider-Man number 5. Read it. You know, it was good. I liked it. I mean, it, basically, not much happens in it. I mean, there's not even really a fight. It's just basically just Mysterio, you know, just, you know, deciding that, oh, you know, I got to see Spider-Man suffer. You know, he could have just left, you know, Peter Parker in the Ultimate Universe and, you know, him basically in hell and everybody thinking that Peter Parker's dead. But no, he's like, I got to go back and, you know, see him suffer. But the big thing about it is like what we were talking about, because like when we were talking about Spider-Man when it was coming out, we also talked about, okay, so we're getting the crossover where Peter's going to the Ultimate Universe. What about Miles going to the regular Marvel universe? And if that happened, what is Miles Morales in the regular Marvel universe? Well, we don't actually see Miles in this story because, you know, spoilers, Peter goes back to the Marvel universe. I kind of think that was going to happen. You know, they're not canceling Amazing Spider-Man because he didn't make it back. You know, he comes back. And he does a search just to see what if there is a Miles Morales in the Amazing Universe, and he sees something, but it shocks him. That's how the comic ends. I mean, it's interesting because, like, why would you end it like that if that's not going to play up again? If that's not going to happen maybe in – yeah, there it is. Yeah. He's like, oh, my God. So why would they end this miniseries like that – if maybe that doesn't play into something with Amazing? I mean, because we were talking, you know, ends in 700, maybe Miles.
How crazy know? Would it be to have Miles be the guy that always takes over after Peter dies?
I mean, because, like, yeah, I mean, I can't see them just leaving it like that. It's a miniseries that played a bigger factor in the Ultimate Spider-Man than it did Amazing. But maybe that was what they were trying to make us think, is that it was a bigger impact than on Ultimate, and we just didn't see it coming around the corner, and it's going to, like, punch Amazing in the face or something, you know, and just, like, surprise everybody.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a good book. I recommend it. It was enjoyable.
Cool.
Yeah, the other thing as well, because the Ultimate Universe is a few years behind the 616 Universe in terms of people's ages, you also got to remember, if Miles is alive, he's a few years older as well.
Ooh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Things to look forward to.
Yep.
Maybe.
Okay, cool. Matt, then, sir, what do you have?
Well, mine is actually fed quite. Right, it's a nice segue to what Triplett was doing on the Batman issue zero, because mine is Nightwing issue zero.
Oh.
And it's basically the complete retelling of the origin story of Dick Grayson, which is pretty much how you expect, but with more things thrown in besides. We pretty much know how Dick Grayson pans out in the New 52 universe and how his circuses is all tied in with obviously the Corvals and all that other shindig, but that, they're not really brought in. This is all about how Dick grows as basically a crime fighter, and it's done a lot more subtly than what we've had in the past. Yes, we've had his parents die, it happened in front of Bruce, yada, yada, yada. But Bruce doesn't turn him into a crime fighter straight away. He's literally Oracle. He's there manning the back computer, telling him, look, I've looked into this, yada, yada, it's over there, that sort of thing. And Bruce is keeping him there with the intention of he can only really be out there fighting crime when he's ready. There's not much else really I can add to that, with the exception of it does feed into pretty much to what Batman issue zero was telling us. There's some other little things as well. I mean,
when he was in the circus, did his costume, did it look like the Nightwing costume? Because in Batman Zero,
yes.
It was.
Yes,
yeah, yeah. I didn't know if they would carry that over or not. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just going to bring it up now. It's both him and his parents are basically dressed out in Nightwing colors.
They're basically wearing the Nightwing suit for their tights. Yeah, that was kind of cool. I like that.
And it actually starts out, yeah, he's not like the bad boy that Jason Todd is, but yeah, he can do some bad things. Like free running through train stations with trains running at full pelt. Yeah, Yeah, him and his friends from the circus basically doing all of that. Nice little segue, by the way. Dick, there is no classic Robin costume anymore. It's not there. It's a completely new costume. I don't know if I can bring it up. Let's see if I can find the relevant page. Comixology, don't you just love it for pages? There we go. This is the new Robin costume, if you can see it.
I can't. Very well,
just.
Sort of.
It looks kind of like the Tim Drake suit, if I'm looking at it right.
Yeah, a little bit. Okay, there we go. That's better. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's basically a variant of Damian Wayne's costume, etc., etc. Don't like it. It looks a little bit too much like it's come out of the movies version. You know what I mean? It's a one big one piece, so to say. But I just like the fact that he's decided when he's ready. Batman hasn't decided. Dick has just grasped it. And they go ahead, fight crime. There is no major villains in this at all. But one big interesting thing here, you've got the bios. I think it's on the back of each of the episode zeros, the issue zeros. There's not one reference to any comic past 2011. Now Nightwing's first appearance was in Nightwing 1 in 2011.
Huh.
Nothing. Everything prior to 2011 does not exist here at all. And also, just to go through the entire bio, raised under the traveling tent of Haley Circus, Dick Grayson was part of his family's act, the Flying Graysons. At the age of 15, Dick's parents were murdered during a performance, and billionaire Bruce Wayne, who happened to be at the audience at the time, gave Dick a home at the Wayne Center. Care center, not Wayne Manor. First off, he sends him to one of his orphanages. So that's a nice new change. And no ward. He's never been his ward. Bruce takes him on as his as basically a guy who's running the manor. He's basically working for him. No ward, no adopting him, none of that. That didn't exist.
Which makes that whole scene in like the early Batman book where it's like Dick and Damian and Tim, like all together, seem kind of odd now.
Yeah, I haven't been reading these. I haven't been reading these things, but like I'm looking at the Batman one now. Yeah, his first appearance was Justice League number 1, 2011.
Yeah.
And they do say that Tim was Red Robin, but he was not Robin number 3.
Nope, that never happened.
Yeah, that's what it says
I don't know if anybody can actually validate this, but I've also think they've written out completely the the fact that Cassie and
Stephanie
Stephanie were ever Batgirl. I think it's only been Barbara.
It's now. Only Barbara. Yep, they're gone.
Yeah, only in the Grant Morrison universe is Stephanie, you know, Batgirl.
Yeah. Yeah, which is apparently a separate universe.
Yeah.
But and no relationship between Barbara or Dick ever. They flirted, and that was about it.
Right, that was the extent of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we kind of knew that out of Batgirl, so.
Yeah. So. But of course, you've got the whole Court of Owls backstory with Dick as well. Now that's pretty much ingrained with the character. But that's about it. I mean, can't really go much. Everybody knows really how the origin of Dick goes, but it's the way it's written. I kind of liked it. I mean, I've seen these origin stories done before, and I feel kind of about it, because once you've seen it, you've seen it. But as part of an origin story, I think it does its job. This is very much a Dick Grayson of the New 52, and in this case, it works. It doesn't quite work for many of the other characters.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. All right, very good. All right, so I'm going to run through a couple here real quick. First, because it's old news, is AVX 11, where we were all tragically shocked to find out that Charles Xavier was alive. And then they killed him. I think most people's reactions to AVX 11 was, he's still alive? And then they're like, oh, he's dead. Okay, well, that's fine, because I thought he was dead anyway. So,
well, he dies so much. I wasn't even sure if he was dead. I honestly thought he wasn't, because he dies so much. It's like, really?
Really?
Is he going to be?
He's
I figured he was going to be handicapped again. He was going to be back in the wheelchair. I thought that was where they were going.
No. No. And it's, like, funny, because there's this whole deal with, like, Bendis. I saw a couple of tweets from Bendis, and he was saying that when they did the Marvel retreat, you know, last year to kind of set the table for everything this year, you know, basically there's no Charles Xavier fans whatsoever, you know, amongst the group of writers and creators. They're all kind of like, can we just kill him off? I'm like, you kill him all the time. That's like, he dies more than Rory. I mean, this is seriously, it's like
him or Magneto.
Yeah.
Just as bad, especially in the early noughties.
Yeah, and so it had, like, I mean, for what should have been, what was attempted at being written as, like, having some kind of impact, we're like, oh, he's dead again, was really what it came out to be. But Scott,
I mean,
does have...
It has some impact.
It has some.
Because,
especially because it was...
The relationship with Cyclops and Xavier, that's the impact, because, you know, it's a father-son relationship, and he's, you know, he's killing his dad, basically.
Yeah, I think it's especially that it was Scott killing him. And, of course, Scott now has the full power of the Phoenix Force, so... that's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. I did see a teaser image that does have Cyclops versus Cyclops, and we know that the 60s version of the X-Men are coming back. So I'm wondering if it's going to be like old Scott versus young Scott. So I really think that I'm pretty convinced that our current version of Cyclops is going to die. There's no way. I don't think he's going to... He can't come out of this alive now. I think that's...
He's either going to die or he's going to freaking jail. I mean, there's no coming back.
But I think at this point, it's like, now that he's killed Charles, I mean, if there's no other impact out of it, I think it's that it's solidified that Cyclops really has to die. It's just like, that can't stand, you know, and him not die.
Except we know he's going to be in Uncanny Avengers.
But that's what I mean. I think that we know that the future Scott, the past Scott, is coming back, at least. So he may be filling out that group, you know. So maybe past Scott. I don't know. Or it'll be like a completely mind-wiped and reformed, you know, Scott. But this...
It's going to be a life model decoy.
It's a life model decoy, Scott. Yes, there you go.
Spoilers, I know.
There
I'm
you go.
Sure.
I can't let a month go by without recommending Scarlet Spider. I won't go into a great amount of detail. I'm just as bad as Chris Triplett with Amazing.
We like our spiders. I know.
It's just they're different ones. But this is the book before the main, you know, one thing is like, this is the end of like this two part with, two or three part, I guess, with, no, it's two part with, the Texas Rangers, which was the Texas Initiative team. And, you know, it's just damn good Kane stuff. You know, he's probably the most heroic that he's been in the series in this book. And he's not real happy about it. he constantly refers to how he's definitely going to kill Peter Parker. but the resolution of this story, if you haven't and have no interest in reading it, is basically that the Texas Rangers, he goes through this whole deal and they fight this corporate guy that has sort of unleashed this evil upon Houston, and it will probably destroy the world if they don't stop it. But you know, and ultimately Kane figures out how to stop it, and you know, they sort of basically, this company ends up bringing, you know, even though the head of the company is sort of put into a coma at the end of it, a new head CEO comes in and he's just as smarmy as the last guy, which really pisses Kane off. but anyway, so the Texas Rangers are like, all right, you know, we're now that you're here, then you're going to be with us and we're going to do this thing. First of all, and of course, that's Texas Twister that says it, who's the leader of the team. He's the cowboy guy with the tornado for legs. And
of course he is.
Yeah. but there's a great part earlier in the book where Kane refers to him as "Hey Tornado Guy," which is funny. And but no, after Texas Twister is like, you know, now that you're part of the Rangers, we're gonna do this. And before he gets the rest of the sentence out, Kane just decks him, just cold cocks him, and he's like, I am not a part of your team. And he's like, all right, fine. Then you're not a part of our team, and Houston's your responsibility. So if it goes to hell, then it's your fault. So now Kane is basically responsible for protecting the entire city of Houston. And basically, because of his pride, you know, shucked off any kind of possible help that would come from the Texas Rangers. But Houston's kind of a hole anyway, so I don't, you know. I mean, Houston gets blown off the map. It's no point. Anyway, but
we apologize if we have any
Houston, if we have any Houston listeners. I mean,
that doesn't reflect the thoughts of the TF Radio.
The TF Radio. I mean, I'm so sorry that your city smells awful. I can't, you know, I really apologize for that. Anyway, Sheree Scarlet Spider, because coming up next month is Minimum Carnage, which is
a
crossover.
That's a great title. I love that.
Yes, it's a crossover with Venom and Scarlet Spider involving Carnage, who is very teeny tiny, apparently. And so it's a little bit of a joke on the Maximum Carnage storyline.
A little bit. Good one.
Just a little bit.
Good one.
Just a little bit.
I was going to say, half expect Minimum Carnage to be the complete polar opposite of Maximum Carnage. Just have it on Free Comic Book Day and have it about 6 pages long.
Right.
Yes!
Real tiny. Yes. So, big recommendation for this week, though, is going to be Justice League Zero, because we finally see what we've all been waiting for, Captain Marvel, also known as Shazam, which is just Shazam now.
You picked up an issue of Justice League? I thought you swore off of Justice League. What
but
happened?
The reason I did that is because it's not Justice League, it's Shazam. So,
okay.
So the backup gets the main story.
JD actually convinced me to go ahead and get Shazam
just
for tonight. That's how we...
So it's good stuff, but it's good stuff. We see the final Wizard of the Council, who I guess, and like I said, I'm not real up on what's been going on in the backup, but I think I caught enough of the gist.
I need to read it. I've got it. I saw like Gary Frank's doing the art for this issue, and I was like, oh my god, well, it's what I've been asking for. Thank you.
It's a great little story here. I mean, he abducts Billy, you know, like he's been abducting people and bringing them down. And, you know, the fallacy of the wizard, we've kind of find out, is that he's been looking for people who were perfect, you know, that had, like, the perfect soul, that, like, the perfect, what does he say? He's looking for pure good. He's been looking for someone that's pure good. And he looks into Billy, and, you know, it's kind of that first backup where you see all of these sort of, you know, mischievous things that Billy has done. And And, you know, the wizard is like, damn, it's just like I thought. You're not, you know, pure good. And Billy's like, dude, nobody's pure good. You're like, you're looking for something that's impossible. It's just like the world sucks and it corrupts people. And, you know, there's no such thing as pure good. And the wizard kind of thinks about that for a minute. And he's like, well, maybe it's just the seeds of good. You know, do you have the embers, as he calls them, the embers of good within him? And then you see, like, some of where, even though there were maybe, you know, sort of bratty things that he had done, that there were actually good reasons that he had done it. And so it shows that he actually does have the embers of good within him. He has the potential to become that. And also because the wizard is really has no other choice, because Black Adam is coming. And this is sort of like his last shot.
Yeah.
So he imbues him with his power and then tells him to speak the magic word, Shazam! And
sure,
at first,
not Captain Marvel, because he's now Shazam, so shouldn't he say Captain Marvel?
Well, Captain, yeah, no. Wouldn't that be?
No.
That would be the way? Say Captain Marvel. Captain Marvel, Shazam! What?
Captain
I don't
Marvel.
Understand who I am!
Easiest way ever of figuring out his secret identity. What's your name?
Yeah, really. Drat! but actually, the first time he says Shazam, it doesn't work, because there's this great little panel where he's like, Shazam? And nothing happens. He's like, you got to say it with purpose! Shazam!
With meanings!
Yep. And so we get to see him, which we've seen the images of the full costume before, but of course it's got a hood now, which Black Adam does as well. You know, he has the sort of... It makes him more wizardly looking, and which is something that even the wizard himself says, that, you know, he has super speed and strength and all of that good stuff. Picture will be coming up as soon as the camera figures out the lighting. But he's also got magic potential in him with as well, and so that'll be interesting to see how that grows over time. But basically the wizard bitches out, and so Billy kind of does... You know, it's like one of those deals where it's like, if you're a kid and you suddenly find that you have superpowers, you know, you're not just going to go start saving the world. You're going to go do kid things with your superpowers.
You're
going
to go throw a car halfway across.
You're going to go throw a car. You're going to go, you know, show you're a badass to people who have been picking on and stuff. So, you know, I'll let you read the rest of it. But it's an interesting little deal to see, you know, what Billy actually does now that he has the power of Shazam. There's also a backup in this for Pandora. We saw in an earlier issue, I want to say it was Phantom Stranger or something else, but she, where she had taken the box again. And so she has the box, and she tries to open it and can't. And actually the wizard shows back up and tells her that they kind of fucked her over when it came to the Trinity of Sin, and that she really shouldn't have been there because, you know, she didn't really intentionally do anything wrong. She just sort of accidentally did something wrong. And he mentions that the box can only be opened with the strongest of heart or the darkest. So, yeah, and so because she can't open the box right now, she even tries to shoot it, which is hilarious. But yeah, so only the strongest of heart or darkest of heart can open it. That will be interesting to see because he disappears after that. And then there's even another page of a backup in this, which we see the question. So I'm wondering if the question
is what
you're
saying is that Justice League does not actually show up in Justice League number 0.
No.
What the hell?
But I think they've said that I think they've already said that Shazam is going to be on, there's like going to be a new member of the league. So I think
I'm for that.
I may be wrong on that, but I think. But we do see a little bit of the question where we see like he's like tied a guy up to a light pole and put the little question mark piece of paper, and you see him from afar in an alley. So so we may yet see the question as well. So definitely check out this zero issue, Sam. I didn't give you everything, so you kind of want to, like I said, it's really good for the little adventure and the dialogue between the wizard as well, Billy and the wizard. So There you go.
You got any interest to continue to get Justice League, or was this just a freak thing?
It was basically just because I knew that the Shazam piece was in it, and because of I knew that the Pandora thing was going to be in it as well, and I mainly wanted to read those. I'm more interested in the larger stories that are going on. I'm interested in all the little bits of what's going on with Pandora and the Trinity of Sin, those kinds of things. So. And because I'm wanting to see where that ends up. So I'm trying to pick up the stuff that's really dealing with that, which is why I got this. But I still have very little interest in Justice League. I think we talked about it a couple weeks ago, but basically Justice League is just it feels so apart from everything else that I don't feel like it's the actual characters coming together. It's like another version of those characters coming together. Even Geoff Johns writing Green Lantern in Justice League isn't the same as he is in his own book, that Johns is writing both. Yeah. So, and that kind of stuff just bugs the hell out of me. So anyway. All right. There you go. Recommendations for the week. Check those out. Get the good stuff. Preferably from your local comic book shop. But something else that you should get, and we are going to talk about in depth, at least somewhat, for the time that we have left, which is a little bit, and not a lot, but it's going to be the annual for More Than Meets the Eye. Now, we have said on this show that More Than Meets the Eye is probably the stronger, More Than Meets the Eye, Robots in Disguise. I think we've sort of favored More Than Meets the Eye. And that the great thing about it is that not only is this really good Transformers stuff, but this is really good comic book stuff as well. And it's set up, things have been set up and, it's going, seems to be going in very particular directions. This is the annual, $8 for the annual, but it's a good size, and it's actually almost got like a trade like cover on it as well. So,
it's like, it's huge too. It's like, let's see, 30, 40, it's 40 plus pages plus some sketches in the back.
Yeah. So you get some extra stuff, for sure. So it's definitely double sized. There's not a lot of ads. Are there ads in this? I don't even think.
I think it's just in the back, but they're ads for the Transformers comic.
Yeah. I mean, but there's no ads going through. So when we say that there's, 40 pages.
Yeah. It's an uninterrupted story.
It's like 220 page issues basically, of story. And then all your ads and stuff are in the back, and then there's the Guido Gildi, Guidi. I never say his name right. Designs for the hand, which we'll talk about in just a second, are what's in the back. So, all right. I guess run us through this. So this is broken into like what I would call mini chapters almost, I guess you kind of say mini chapters. The first story here is just hilarious where I don't know if this has been set up before with Ultra Magnus, because I just don't know a lot about what's pre-existing in the IDW universe. But there's all of these like little Insecticon things, apparently, in Ultra Magnus's body. And
this sounds incredibly familiar. Like, maybe I read this in an issue of Wolverine and the X-Men.
I don't
know. But I still liked it. I'm just saying.
I mean, it does seem... I mean, it's not an uncommon story. But basically, Hot Rod ends... Or Rodimus, I'm sorry. Rodimus ends up leading a group to go inside Ultra Magnus' body to fight off these Insecticons, which are basically sort of eating him, I guess, from the inside. But it's... Skids, Whirl, First Aid, and Rodimus, I guess, are on this team.
Yeah.
Now, there's not a lot to come out of this other than it's really odd, that they do mention that these have sort of reemerged, that they thought they had been treated. But the big thing is they all started, they end up in his mouth module.
Yeah.
And they start attacking these particular pistons in his mouth, which are like rusted in place. And they're like, well, are they important? Well, and they're like, well, only if you want to smile. Which, you know, of course, it's been a hell of a long time since Ultra Magnus has smiled, if he ever did. But they basically figure out that the only way to really kill all of the Insecticons off is to have Ultra Magnus smile.
It's because they climb up on the pistons and start, like, chewing through the pistons. And it's like, if the pistons will just fire, it'll kill them. So, you know, you don't want to do it, Ultra Magnus, but if you could just smile, maybe you can save the day.
I like the way it's put out as well. It's just like, I just want to give you a great big smile. And then Magnus is like, oh, what? And it's just, I want you to activate your mouth pistons and do this.
Yeah, and it's like, you smile. And so you get this full panel across the page of Ultra Magnus smiling, which is like, oh, that's got to be an avatar somewhere. But, and of course they all explode and stuff, of which Ultra Magnus thinks is humiliating. The next page is the best one, though, because he's going through and running into people on the Lost Light. And, you know, like, he runs into one guy, and he has, like, the little bit of his bio, which the end piece being potential troublemaker. And he's like, oh, you should let me take that crossbow. And he's like, yeah, whatever you say, Smiler. He runs into, like, Jackpot and Trailbreaker, you know, and of course he sees their bios. And even though Jackpot's is, like, talks about him being a gambler and stuff, and he's also a potential troublemaker, Trailbreaker talks about how great he is and then ends up with potential troublemaker.
I love that Trailbreaker says Trailbreaker / Trailcutter. I'm like thinking, does he just take on multiple identities or something?
Yeah, I don't know.
Is that what that's going on?
Yeah, I don't know what that's about, but, you know, Jackpot.
It's obviously like the toy, you know, because they had to change the name of the toy and all that, but still, I think it's kind of funny.
But Ultra Magnus tells Jackpot, he's like, eh, your badge is a little crooked. And he's like, yeah, a bit like your smile, huh, Ultra Magnus? Yeah. Trailbreaker follows up with, like, oh, don't let him upset you, Ultra Magnus. Just grin and bear it. poor Ultra Magnus. So
I like the last one. It says, it just looks at the reflection and goes, Ultra Magnus, duly appointed enforcer of the Tyrest of Kord.
Laughing stock. Yep. It's great. It's great. So.
I think before that, one of my favorite lines in this entire comic was when they were inside the body fighting the Insecticons, and he says, "Whirl, you let Whirl inside my body."
Yeah.
It's okay. He's been told not to open fire. He's armed.
That was great. It's like, okay, you let him in my body, and you gave him a weapon.
Yeah. I love Whirl. Whirl might be one of my favorite characters.
Yeah, Whirl. Well, it's like, that's the thing, is like all these characters are so well developed. So so we see this bit where there's a little bit of a conversation between Chrome Dome and Rewind, which references some other stuff that we had seen. There's a great little bit here where Tailgate asks Cyclonus to come to his badging ceremony. Which Cyclonus doesn't say anything, so I guess he's not going to go. And then we see Swerve, and Swerve is looking for Red Alert, and he ends up down in the engine room next to Orr. And he starts sort of having a conversation with Orr.
Yeah.
And Orr talks back.
Oh, yes.
It's like...
Yeah. I didn't see this coming.
No.
Honestly... I didn't know they still had him stuck in there. I thought,
well, there's no way to get him out.
Get him out somehow.
They pretty much established in the previous comic that if they even attempted to remove him out of the wall, it's it would cause something to the quantum thrusters, and then that's it. Everyone would be like scattered everywhere. Wow. So they had no choice but to leave his corpse there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sucks to be Orr. Just saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great conversation here between Rodimus and Drift, where Drift tries to convince him that he might want to, like, refrain from saying, you know, till all are one. And then we see this great, like what would be, like, if you were watching a film, it would just be, like, a cut scene, like a sequence of cut scenes where Rodimus is like, till all are one. He's like, I don't know what, I don't, Optimus used to say it.
But it's just idly embedding his knife into his desk while he's talking as well.
I know. Oh my god, it's great. You know, and just yeah, as they're sort of having the conversation. But the end of this though is Ultra Magnus comes up and he's like, we need a new crew. He's like, seriously, either we need a new crew or I'm gonna go. I'm being mocked openly in front of other people.
Ultra Magnus is not supposed to be a figure of fun. That's awesome.
Oh god. So this eventually leads into the second part where it starts out with Tailgate's badging ceremony, of which Jackpot is taking down the bets for everyone to how long it takes Rodimus to get to the till all are one phrase, of which Brainstorm takes 8 seconds. And they're all like, really? But and Whirl mentions that he left graffiti inside Ultra Magnus, which says the duly appointed enforcer of the Tyrest Accord can duly appointed my shiny metal. Well, you get the idea. But there's a mention here that, you know, some of the people in the med bay who have been like deactivated for a while, like sort of kind of halfway, like were waking up and like crushing their own heads for some reason. So they had to like bind their hands. Which seems odd, but
that's,
whatever.
That's not odd or scary at all.
No. Rodimus starts his speech and within the first paragraph says, all are one, at least, which I guess counts, of which I'm pretty sure it's Brainstorm here. 5 seconds! 5 seconds counts! So he starts to give this great speech where he's like, I remember when I was, you know, back in my original badging ceremony, and Optimus stood before me and he said, well, it was probably something really cool and heroic. I can't remember what it is now, but it was very wise, I'm sure. Anyway, so he ends up drawing ancient Cybertronian on Tailgate instead of an Autobot badge.
Like, before I read that, I looked at the image, and I thought, honestly, they were just saying that Rodimus can't draw worth a shit.
I know, when I just kind of thumbed it initially, and I was like, what the hell? And it's old Cybertronian, which they translated as reading, let me out. Huh. Well, that's strange. So, anyway, he's like, all right, well, there you go. And they don't want to say it's possession, but before they can deal with it too much, they get hailed by another ship, which turns out to be the Galactic Council. On the ship, the Benign Intervention.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. Beautiful exchange here between Rodimus and the guy. He's like, as I suspected, Cybertronians. He's like, as I suspected, a fleshling in a hat.
Even a stupid hat.
So you can tell that there's not a lot of love lost between the Galactic Council. I don't know if this is a pre-existing thing or not. They seem to imply that it is, but they at least give enough setup that if you don't. But there's a great exchange here between Ultra Magnus. I mean, this is Ultra Magnus in his prime. And even the other Autobots are like, you know, mentioning it. It's like, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen.
Because this is the best day of his life.
He manages... Ultra Magnus manages to, through a series of sub-rules and, you know, pleasantries, manage to get them time to go down to the planet, because this is the planet where the Crystal City is. And so they've, like, ordered it as a religious rite to go down to see at least the ruins, which the Galactic Council had previously been barring them from. So they do allow a small contingency to go. Of course, they don't, like, allow them to pick the contingency. They just sort of randomly scoop up the people that are around. So it ends up being a decent group anyway. But Swerve has sort of been stuck down with Orr. And they're telling him, it's like, okay, just don't freak him out. Don't tell him where he is. Because if he freaks out, then he might, you know, cause the ship to just randomly jump anywhere in the universe. So just kind of keep him calm and cool and we've got this other stuff we're dealing with. So enjoy that. So he just tells Orr that they're that he's in the med bay and his, you know, basically he's incapacitated. He's immobilized his optics and, you know, basically his sensors are just offline, you know, while he's there. And so he just ends up talking to him. And actually, Orr thinks that he's someone else. Who is it?
Pipes.
Yeah, he thinks he's Pipes. And Swerve just plays along.
He's talking shit about Swerve. He's like, yeah, I don't like that Swerve.
Yeah, I don't like that Swerve guy. He's like, oh, yeah, I'm Pipes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But Swerve kind of gets into it, too. There's almost like a self-deprecating piece here because obviously Swerve is still sort of dealing with the fact that he basically blew Rung's head off. Yeah. Even though it was kind of by accident, you can tell he's still got a lot of guilt around it.
All this stuff between Swerve and Orr is awesome, and that's just a perfect example of why this isn't your typical Transformers comic. You know,
No. It's
basically a guy talking to someone who is hurt severely bad, and he's trying to keep him calm while trying to, you know, alleviate his personal problems to him. That's shit you don't see in Transformers.
Well, and I think what's interesting. Go ahead.
It was one of my favorite scenes of the whole comic, actually, is the whole thing between Orr and Swerve, because as Triplett says, I mean, Swerve pretty much is going through some serious shit at the moment.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, this is my confession time, but I can't really say I'm Swerve because he kind of hates my guts. So, yeah, I'm going to talk to him the third person and hopes he doesn't
You can't
realize.
Confess to anybody else on the ship because you don't want him to know, so of course you're going to confess it to the guy that can't leave.
Yeah. Right, they can't go anywhere.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, they find the group on the planet. They end up finding a Metro Titan. I would say the through theme of this is really, I mean, if nothing else, like, this is establishing, like I said, I don't know how much pre-existing, you know, it was a big thing in the Marvel comic that there was, like, this, the mythos. You know, it's not that Primus hasn't been mentioned, at least in the IDW universe, but I don't know how much establishment has really been done. You know, we knew about, like, the 13, like, original Transformers or whatever. But in terms of, like, the real god mythos, I mean, there's been some, like, discussion, but I don't know that there's been a lot of setup. And I would say that a large portion of this annual is really talking about, you know, these Transformers and their sort of religious reference or context. Or lack thereof. I mean, Ratchet is an atheist. We, you know, find out in this, which makes him more awesome to me. But, not that he wasn't before. But yeah. I mean, so there's definitely even those that don't believe in it. There's some that do. So that's kind of what this leads up to. But what we find out about, like, this Metro Titan is that there were, and that's kind of where this there's sort of almost, I would say, like, an insert here where they have Cyclonus of all people. You know, Cyclonus talks about how he would recite, you know, this epic, almost like you would consider it to be like an epic poem or something.
One other thing about that is prior to Cyclonus starting to recite it is the fact that Rewind actually urges him to do it because Rewind has heard it before, but he actually wants to hear it from a believer, which is kind of really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to record it, too, doesn't he?
And he wants to record it, yeah.
He
records everything. Yeah. But, so we get this great story. Now, here's what's great about this. It's in a completely different art style than the rest. Well, it's done by Gildy, isn't it?
Yeah,
so Gildy. So he actually did the art part for this, and it's in that, like, very distinct 80s Marvel style, which is what's so great about it, because it's, like, literally you could almost believe that this was ripped from the pages of, like, an, you know, 86 issue or, you know, 1985, 1986 issue of, like, the Marvel story. It's colored, shaded, you know, everything just like that. All the way down to, like, the color pixelation, you know, the color marks, and the Kirby spheres. I'll kind of paraphrase this, but I don't really want to spoil too much of the story, but basically it works out. It's like taking that original Transformers story, and in a way, it's like, if you've never read, if you,
Matt, have you read or Triplet the Silmarillion?
I know of it. I got a friend that, my God, if someone could be considered to have a PhD on Tolkien lore, it would be him. And he has tried to explain it to me, and he can drone on for hours. So I know of it, if that's what you're saying.
It's kind of like, I mean, I almost kind of see it as like an odd merging of that original Transformers, some of that original Transformers lore, with a little bit of idea from that, like, the Silmarillion origin of the gods, you know. Kind of pressed together, because you end up with these five sort of like demigod almost, where you have Mortalus, Solomonus, Primus, Epistemus, and Adaptus. And as it sort of turns out, like, each of these gods like plays a big part in, you know, what eventually becomes what we know of as the Transformers. It's a perfect sort of myth story that sort of like ends up giving explanation to, you know, everything. Like, you know, for example, that, you know, Mortalus basically sort of is the warlike of the group and ends up, you know, starting all the fighting. And Adaptus had like granted his shape changing to the early Cybertronians. You see that Solomonus.
I'm reading the thing right now. Primus basically becomes Vector Sigma.
Yes.
So basically, all the key things we get from previous Transformers lore is effective from these characters. Mortalus actually ends up becoming a conduit for Vector Sigma, but it's very much shaped like the Matrix.
Yes.
So he is, in a sense, the Matrix.
Mortalus traps Solomonus in what becomes the Matrix. Yeah, and that's why it contains the wisdom. But you see, like, they become symbols almost, where like Solomonus becomes the wisdom part of it. Epistemus and Adaptus become the baseline for the brain module and the transformation cog that all Transformers end up having. But a big thing out of this is that, you know, we know that Transformers don't really age and die. And they say that's because Mortalus was killed. And since Mortalus was like the representative of mortality, they sort of killed mortality and now they have immortality. I mean, it's brilliant. It's a brilliant story. And I'm doing it no justice. So you definitely need to like go back and read this. The actual dialogue is really well done.
I wouldn't even say it's a new origin. It's more of taking what we've known from previous Transformers lore, especially from the Marvel era, and adapting to it, putting more meat on the bones, as it were.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, this fits in. I mean, you don't have to take out anything pre-existing. You know, it kind of fits in that way, but it's still really brilliant in the way that it's done. Like I said, it's worth the read. To read that bit. But the last little bit here is that the Metro Titans were sort of sent out to, you know, sort of seed the world, took people with them, and that's eventually became like the Knights of Cybertron or whatever. So, and of course they're based
last page makes me want an orange and a green Metroplex.
My God, I know, right? Like, I need all of these Metroplexes. Because they're basically just different Metroplexes, and they can like teleport and warp around and stuff. So, but from there you have like this really interesting exchange between Ratchet and Drift.
Drift
is about ready to gut Ratchet. You know, because Ratchet first, you know, talks about being an atheist and not believing in all that nonsense, and you know, Drift has become a little bit violent, but anyway, there's the rest of this becomes interesting because they're sort of in a pickle, is what ends up happening. The Chrome Dome tries to connect with the brain module of the Metro Titan, and when he does, he sort of like awakens some memories. One thing that is very prominent in those memories is something that we haven't seen for a while, which is that weird monster that showed up like several issues back that just kept saying 1984.
Yeah.
There's a lot of those in his memory. So, but more than that, when the Metro Titan wakes up, he like sort of inadvertently shoots a beam out of his eyes, which just sort of happens to hit the Galactic Council's ship. And they sort of take that as an aggressive act.
Ah, those damn Cybertronians. I knew this was going to happen.
Yeah. Curse all of you Cybertronians. And what are they? They give them a threat level 10. And even some of the grunts are like, nothing's a threat level 10. Well, other than them. So now they're in a real mess because the Lost Light has been trapped in basically a stasis field. Can't get out. They're on the ground with the Metro Titan. They're about to get attacked by this Galactic Council. So they're not really sure exactly. There's a little bit of disagreement about what to do. And Ultra Magnus's idea, which he's back on the Lost Light, is to destroy the Lost Light because that's Ultra Magnus. You know, he's God. Like, well, they're not going to take us alive. But Rodimus can't really convince him to stop. So they're basically in this, I mean, it's a very tense end of this. And I guess it doesn't really spoil too much to give away the end here. But it's it's basically the epitome of a sort of Deus Ex ending. Where Brainstorm has been carrying around his miniaturization gun that he used to miniaturize everybody to go into Ultra Magnus. He's been carrying around the gun, miniaturized, of course. His idea is to miniaturize the Metro Titan so that it would have enough power to transport itself back to Cybertron, because that's what it wants to do, and that's why everything's been waking up, right? It's been sending out this scream that only it can hear and others that are attuned. So, like, Auror is basically dead, and so it, like, revived him, and he could hear, and all the dead people that were in the bay could hear the scream. That's why they were trying to, like, cover their, you know, ears, for lack of a better term, you know, and like crushing their own heads. That's why all this weird stuff has been going on. You know, why Rodimus wrote the stuff on Swerve or on Tailgate. It wasn't let me out. It was, you know, let me go or something. It was the translation was a bit off. So when they miniaturize the Metro Titan in one swift move, he manages to, like, all in one, teleport or out of the engines, teleport the ship away, and teleport himself supposedly back to Cybertron, I would guess, is their guess as well.
Well, of course, Bumblebee and Cola.
Huh?
Well, if it's going to Cybertron, that's where the other cast are.
Right, which is where the RID cast is. So, so they may be getting a Metro Titan shrunk down. I'm not sure how shrunk down on their doorstep pretty quick.
That's what you call a tiny Titan. A tiny Titan.
Is it a tiny Titan? We went there, kids. Went there. So,
I'm reading this like as you guys were talking because I didn't finish it, but I'm reading the part where Swerve thinks that Primus intervened in sent order the after spark, so like you know, I guess let him move on or something. So that's kind of cool. He's kind of gone through this kind of crisis of faith, I guess, and maybe gotten some faith back.
And it was able to deal with some of those issues. And I think that's what you end up seeing out of this. I mean, most of the end of this is basically just sort of explaining all the oddness of what happened. But Ultra Magnus does confess that he was offered a spot on the Galactic Council. You know, that he's known throughout the galaxy and that Ultra Magnus sort of declined. But the really interesting part here is that you see the dialogue, you see a cutscene where this official who had offered him the spot on the Galactic Council is speaking, I guess, to one of his superiors. And you see the scene where he's asking him, and he's saying, you know, we could use your strength, your inflexi- you know, he, or he says that, you know, they could use him because,
Or he's saying, okay, let me go back here. He's saying, you know, Ultra Magnus is saying that he can't leave the Lost Light, and this official is saying, well, you know, you don't want to leave your crew. You're saying that outweighs like the trillions of people in the galaxy that could use them. And this official is saying, well, your great strength is also your inflexibility. You're detached and impartial and remote. And that if you hang out with these people, they're going to change you eventually. You know, they're going to make you like them. And so this higher ranking official says, and well, what did he say? And he's like, nothing. He just smiled.
Yeah.
And it's like, I mean, that's what makes this book so good. I mean, when you go like, when you have a story like this, like, you know, usually we talk about annuals in a lot of instances are kind of
you talk throwaway. About them negatively.
You really, you do. Yeah, I mean,
they raise the price. It's a story that's not good enough to be in the main book. It doesn't matter. And then now you just get annuals where they've kind of turned it around a little bit. And with Transformers, yeah, it's totally – you have like, to read this book.
You have to
God.
Read I mean, this. Like, you need this. Do not – skip this.
So yeah, just because it's $8 doesn't mean skip it. $8 means it's twice as fun.
I would have bought a single comic that was basically just this first bit, you know, up to like the tailgates like graffiti bit, you know, like if it would have ended before the Galactic Council showed up or even ended like that was the last page, like I would have bought that book. You know, or like this whole book, like The Peace with the Metro Titan, I would have bought just that book. You know, the entire insert with the history, you know, with this like religious mythology is just incredible. And this, the last bit where it's like, it ends up the smiling part pays off, you know, in a different way. And you see maybe a softer side of Ultra Magnus. This is good stuff. I mean, do not skip this. And if you're saying to yourself, well, I like comics, but not Transformers, I get that. I understand that. But you have to realize that this is just good comic stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not just it's not just good Transformers stuff. It's just good comic stuff.
It's some very good character interplay that's been going on ever since Barbara and Robert Space took on the range. There is nothing bad you could say about any of the characters in these comics whatsoever. I mean, one thing we haven't touched upon as well, I mean, Rodimus is a bit of a dick as a leader because it's also his ego. There's this whole scene right near the bit where he's telling Swerve yet again to basically make Orr agitated so they can jump, do a quantum jump.
Right, yeah.
And Swerve is doing this whole speech to him through his audio saying, look, Rodimus, I want you to listen to me. You've not presented it as much, but you've given me a choice. Hurt someone or save them. Last time I hurt someone, not this time. Not today. Today I choose to save everyone. And surely, as an Autobot, that's the only choice I can make.
Mm-hmm.
Swerve out. And all of this, Rodimus and only Rodimus knows. As soon as anyone said to him, because it like Swerve disobeyed me, and said, is that all he's done? And he said, yeah, pretty much. It's like, Rodimus, you are an egotistical dick.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And that's what makes it interesting. I mean, and, you know, again, that's like the thing between these two books. It's like, here's two great books that are Transformers-based, neither of which has Optimus Prime as the leader in it. Yay. And that's to their benefit, you know.
There's no, you know, Megatron, there's no Optimus Prime.
Yeah, there's no Megatron, there's no Optimus Prime. I mean, there's hardly, I mean, in a sense, like, I mean, you know, it's like that one episode of Voyager in the sense, like, for this book, because it is, like, sort of, like, a few, like, one or two, like, Decepticons or older that are, like, shoved together on this ship and lost in the middle of the universe. But, you know, it's just, like, that doesn't necessarily play as big of a role. It's, like, there's really interesting characters that are interacting with each other in fun and interesting ways, and yet there's peril and excitement and all of those things as well. It's one of the best, you know, in a sense, just because of the way Transformers is set up, it's probably one of the best team books. I mean, for lack of, you know, it's a great team book. Like, so many team books are not this good, you know?
And more to the point, there's not a single character on, at least on both of these books, that is unimportant.
No.
I mean, from about one, either one of these writers, you could take Mr. Spanner for hands here and still make him a really relevant character.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, we got Swerve. For Christ, you know,
yeah.
you got Swerve,
you know,
Tailgate.
I think Chris McFeely had said, we'd said a while back, you know, it, like, look at Trailbreaker. I mean, the only thing that Trailbreaker was useful for was force fields.
Force fields,
you know?
Yeah.
And he's even got, like, a decent characterization and stuff in this. But, yeah. You know, and that's why I say, just from the story and everything that's laid out, like, this is a really good series. You should be reading it. Do yourself a favor. Yeah. Start at the beginning of this, you know, and go back and pick
Death
it up.
Optimus Prime.
Yeah. Death of Optimus Prime. And then,
so,
you know,
so all
go
of
from
that's
there.
In trade except for, like, what, like the last couple of issues?
Probably. I think so, yeah.
I mean, one more thing before I basically wrap this up myself is even little things like religion isn't really done in a patronizing way either. I mean, also, it's a centerpiece for all the characters. It ain't a defining thing for an Autobot, a Decepticon, or in the middle. I mean, take what happened in this very issue. A guy who recited it is basically a nail, because that's what Cyclonus is. He's non-aligned.
Right.
Drift is a former Decepticon who's a believer, a strong believer. Ratchet is an Autobot who is an atheist. People like Swerve are also believers that believe there was some divine intervention involved. That defines the whole spectrum of people across the board. And that's a cool thing.
Yeah, I mean, and it makes them more, you know, approachable, I think, reachable, identifiable in that way. I mean, because, you know, whether you're religious or not, you know, we're in a world in which there's a lot of different religions or different ideas. And I think it makes some of the characters relatable. It gives a linking thing. You know, between
them, but... I want to beat up on Teen Titans because I was reminded of it. These characters are way more relatable than Teen Titans.
Robots.
A spaceship out in outer space are more relatable than a bunch of kids that deal with angst on a superhero group. What is wrong with this world? My God.
Yep.
Red Robin is Doogie Howser. Ah!
Yeah. So, anyway, we'll say one more time. Do yourself a favor. Pick up at least More Than Meets the Eye. But Robots in Disguise is good, too. It's just good in a different way. It's a little more political drama. You know, there's just a lot of... there's a lot of subtlety, I guess, in some ways, maybe to that. Different than More Than Meets the Eye, where More Than Meets the Eye is sort of like an adventure story with still really great characters, but trying to survive together. Yeah. So there you go. Check it out. It's our, once again, we're recommending Transformers Comics. We don't do it, we try not to do it too much because we are part of sort of a Transformers network, you know, being affiliated with RFC. So we try not to shove it down your throats. But I think this annual was worth doing just because it was so good, especially as an annual.
We want this to continue to be made, so we want people to buy this.
We want more people to buy this. So
more people should buy.
So, all right. So there you go. There's your comics for the past 2 weeks. A nice cross section. You should pick up all the stuff that we talk about and more, preferably from your local comic book shop. If not, you know, Comixology or whatever. And a lot of stuff available in trade. So if you're reading some of the Zero issues that we're recommending, hey, go back and pick up the trades as well. Because a lot of that stuff is out now on trade, so check it out. So, one more time, I did read an update a little bit ago from Chris McFeely, and he said his dad is coming around a little bit. So, good news there, hopefully. Still a long road, but it's looking positive so far. So, again, you know, our thoughts are with him, his dad, his family, and hopefully we'll see him back here soon once everything is all... settle out. Matt?
Nowhere near as angry as Chris McFeely.
No, and less voices. Maybe less voices, I guess, as well. But Matt, thanks so much. It was kind of last minute. I only talked to you this morning, so I really appreciate you taking the time to come on and be with us. That way it wasn't just...
It was fun to have a guest on the show.
Yeah, somebody...
We need to do this more.
Bring in some... Well, it's, and like I said, whenever we have someone out, it's a good opportunity to have, you know, someone on. Especially otherwise, it would have just been Chris Triplett and I. And
nobody wants that.
Nobody wants that.
No.
Nobody wants that.
So, how was Scarlet Spider the... Spider-Man!
Yeah. So,
I have been told by Mr. Logan Blaze that Danny Ketch is an awesome Ghost Rider. Shut your whore mouth.
He's awful. He's an awful second-rate Ghost Rider. What book is Danny Ketch in right now? What was the last time he was in a comic?
He's coming back. Marvel Now.
He's coming back with Marvel Now? Yeah, I did see that Ghost Rider is on a cover of something coming up, but I'm pretty sure it's not Dan Ketch. So, yeah. Anyway. fuck you. Matt, tell us where you're at, what you got. Promote your shit, if you would. Not shit. Not it is shit, but it's your stuff. So...
WordPress from Blogspot, but in the meantime you can find us on the nerdsphere.blogspot.com. I do my own show, occasionally I host it, occasionally I'm a panelist on it called Sharp and Watch This, which is the roundtable and commentary show that all it's geek and good in the world and sometimes a little bit crap. The last one we did was it was Brave Exkaiser. So anybody that knows about their Brave toys, then check that out. And my dear friend Adam, a.k.a. Grufflock, who was also meant to be on this show but couldn't come on, he does a riveting version of the Brave Exkaiser theme, which you should check out. And this ain't at all my attempt to get the listeners up. Well, yes, it is. you can also find me on Twitter under Timey to Wimey, and you can find me on YouTube under Matt Clark, because apparently YouTube doesn't like me to be Timey to Wimey anymore.
No, Google has decided that you have to use your name for stuff. So, yes. All right, very cool. So definitely, go check that cool stuff out. You can find us at FanboyVS. On Twitter, and fanboyversus.com is the website. We do the show weekly at 4 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. GMT time, live at tfradio.net/live. Shows also post early Monday morning for those of us in the States, and I guess afternoon for those of you on the other side of the ocean. So you can check it out there as well. Matt, thanks so much for joining us. Chris Triplett, appreciate you, showing up each week. And hopefully, like I said, we'll at least get Nicole back next week. I'm sure she'll be really excited to be back in the swing, since this is her last day, I guess, of vacation. So, but anyway, for us here, thanks so much for tuning in. And please tune in next time when it'll be Fanboy versus...
This has been Fanboy Versus. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at TF Radio for news and updates. Like the podcast? Leave us feedback on iTunes. Copyright 2011, Radio Free Cybertron.